欢迎收看美国之音的海峡论坛，我是樊东宁。台海地区的紧张情势近来不断升高，今天的海峡论坛节目，我们特别为您专访到美国国务院前国务次卿克拉奇 Mr. Keith Clark。 克拉奇先生曾经在2020年的9月份访问台湾，成为了40多年来访台级别最高的现任美国国务院官员，卸任之后也持续关注美中台关系，并致力于科技外交。克拉奇任内在美国国务院主管的是经济、能源与环境事务，他同时也是一位纵横硅谷长达30多年的科技企业领袖。在今天的节目当中，我们就请克拉奇先生来谈一谈他对近来台海紧张局势的看法，以及最来备受关注的美中贸易谈判以及美中之间的科技大战究竟是谁输谁赢。下面请收看专访的完整内容。U.S. former Under Secretary of State Mr. Keith Clark is joining us from San Francisco. Mr. Clark, great to see you again.
Great to see you, Daphne. Thanks for having me on.
Mr. Clark, you were the highest ranking U.S. diplomat to visit Taiwan in 4 decades. And then we remember that you were greeted by Chinese bombers and, fighters, like nearly 40 of them, you know, when you visit Taiwan last year. And over the past week,PLA has sent more than 150 aircraft to fly over Taiwan. What's your take on the growing crisis across the Taiwan Strait?
Yeah, definitely. You know, they're doing it for a couple of reasons. The first is to intimidate the Taiwanese who cherish their democracy and intimidate them in giving up their free will to stand their ground, which they're going to continue to stand their ground. The other is really...I think to test the U.S. and the free world, you know, after the Chinese state media openly mocked Taiwan for relying on the U.S. for its defense after the Afghan crisis. But I can tell you, with all the domestic issues brewing in China in terms of the real estate and energy crisis, she's weaker than he wants the world to believe, and he's overplaying his hand. And tyrants can't really...persuade, so they bully, especially if their own deck of cards is weaker than what they want others to think. And there's no doubt about it, the U.S. and Taiwan and our allies are going to stand our ground.
Mr. Clark, you said that Xi Jinping probably is weaker than what he thinks. But, you know, Xi Jinping has called for peaceful reunification with Taiwan, and experts across the Taiwan Strait as well as the U.S. military expert, predict that PLA would have the capability to invade Taiwan within 6 to 8 years. And what's your opinion about the PLA's possibility to take over Taiwan, even though the price would be very, very high, Mr. Clark?
Well, General Secretary Xi sees this as a crowning jewel in his legacy. And it makes those tensions between China and Taiwan more combustible, especially since he's feeling the heat internally. But I can tell you, most Chinese citizens disagree with his brand of, you know, bellicose actions. And it really makes him look desperate. And here again, this is the free world stands with Taiwan in both diplomatic and economic realms. And, you know, a CCP military invasion would be his political demise. And, you know, the one thing, Daphne, you know, in my 60 bilaterals that I had as Under Secretary of State with foreign ministers, economic ministers, you know, I could see that, you know, these guys were intimidated by China and their actions. They're a bully. And, you know, the one thing I know about bullies is that when you confront them, they back down. And they really back down when you have your friends by your side. And that's why, you know, Alliance of Democracies is so key to defending Taiwan.
And President Tsai Ing-wen also vowed in her National Day speech that Taiwan will not bow to China's pressure and will continue working with like-minded countries to stand on the front line to defend against the threats from authoritarian regime. What's your make of President Tsai Ing-wen's speech?
Well, I'm a big fan of President Tsai, and I really appreciated being over the Taipei House, having dinner with when I was over there. You know, she recently stated that the people of Taiwan have made it clear to the entire world that democracy is non-negotiable. Mm-hmm. And Taiwan will not bend to that pressure. And same with my friend, Taiwan Foreign Minister Wu. You know, he put an exclamation point on that. And I have an unwavering belief in the strength of Taiwan's leaders and the citizens that they're going to stand their ground. And I know they have the support of us and our allies. And, you know, what we showed when we put together the clean network that defeated the CCP's 5G master plan and created this nonpartisan model, this was a great success when we all stand together. And, you know, as a result of that, that's probably why my family was sanctioned by the Chinese government. And I will not bend a knee to Emperor Xi, and I know the Taiwan people won't either.
Mm. And Mr. Kroc, with Taiwan becoming an increasingly critical issue between U.S. and China, do you think Washington has a clear and effective policy to deal with the situation right now?
Well, this is one of the biggest unifying bipartisan issues on Capitol Hill. And you're seeing all kinds of congressmen, senators rallying behind this. And they've made that message clear. And I think, you know, the other big thing is that we see, you know, the citizens of the world have woken up to the CCP's 3C strategy of concealment, co-option, and coercion. And the citizens of the world now know that the pandemic is a result of the concealment of the virus. That's really coming out now. People could see the co-option of Hong Kong resulted in the eviscerations of its citizens' freedoms, and they don't want that to happen with Taiwan. And then, you know, people are now really hearing about that coercion in Xinjiang and how that has resulted in a punishable genocide. And they don't like it. And it's beginning to give strong political will, not just to our government leaders, but also to government leaders around the world, as well as global CEOs.
And let's talk about another battleground between Washington and Beijing, which is economic and trade. We heard the U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Dai Qi, she made a policy speech talking about the resumption of U.S.-China trade talk. But some people think like she was sending mixed messages, especially when she used the phrase durable coexistence of the United States and to describe the economic relations between China and U.S. What is your make of her speech as well as the resumption of U.S.-China trade talk?
Well, I know one of the things she said was China's lack of adherence to global trading norms has undercut the prosperity of Americans and all others around the world. You know, in short, the field isn't level. And for the last 40 years, it's given China a big advantage. You know, Americans believe in fair trade. But when somebody comes in the market and doesn't play by the rules, the market is no longer free and you've got to do something about it. So if you think of our democratic values, things like integrity, accountability, transparency, reciprocity, respect for rule of law, respect for sovereignty nations, respect for property, respect for the planet, respect for human rights. These are things that we honor. These are things the Chinese Communist Party doesn't honor. So if I'm competing against you, Daphne, and I don't have to be transparent, and I can use slave labor, and I can use coal-fired power plants, and I don't have to obey the law, or I am the law, you're going to win every time. And, you know, what we found out was that, look, these democratic values, we use them to our advantage instead of their advantage. And that's what we did with the Clean Network. And basically what we did was we weaponized the very principles that protect our freedoms. And that's what we've got to do here.
But now in terms of the U.S.-China competition, like you said, Chinese state media now believe that their strategy to force U.S. to change its Chinese policy is working. And there's also kind of a debate and the disagreement within the Biden administration, like how tough should be to China. What is your opinion about that?
Well, I think if the Chinese government media is saying it, the opposite is true. As I mentioned, the bipartisan support in Washington is huge. And I think she knows that neither Taiwan nor the U.S. nor our Democratic allies will bend a knee to that intimidation. And he knows that if he invades, this is going to be his political demise. And, the majority of people in China, and particularly some of the CCP insiders, they don't want this.
Mm-hmm. And then we know that you have been busy after leaving the government just a couple of weeks ago at UNGA. You launched the Center for Tech Diplomacy at Purdue. What is the center's mission and what makes it unique, Mr. Kruk?
Well, I'm so excited to be the chairman and co-founder of the Tech Diplomacy Center at Purdue. You know, it's now the preeminent global authority for securing freedom through tech diplomacy and trusted technology. It's the only institution now in the world that focuses on that intersection of technology and foreign policy and national security. What I learned in terms of serving from the government, coming from, 30 years in Silicon Valley, is that, this is not taught in the State Department, the Treasury, Trade, DOD, and this type of economic, techno-economic statecraft that we were able to, in essence, kind of invent is critical to securing our freedom. And the Tech Diplomacy Center is 100% nonpartisan, and it serves as a bridge between Silicon Valley and Washington, as well as our allies, to advance freedom around the world. And it's much like that mission with the Clean Network. It's really, we're forming a global trust network for like-minded countries, companies, and civil society. And our freedom depends on it.
Mm-hmm. Talking about the technology diplomacy, and we want to have a follow-up question for Ms. Kruk to talk about the tech war between U.S. and China, because recently there's one Pentagon, former senior cybersecurity official at the Pentagon, told Financial Times he thinks that China is on track to defeat the United States in the battle over technology, and the U.S. is losing the technology war. Do you agree his comments, Mr. Kruk?
Well, I saw that comment, and I think he clarified it later. And he said, I never said we lost. He said, if we don't wake up now, we have no fighting chance to win against China 15 years from now. And by the way, I think it's critical that we rally, the tech titans, that we build that bridge between Silicon Valley and Washington. And, Daphne, one of the things I was able to do was to bring in a dozen Silicon Valley veterans, technologists, entrepreneurs, results-oriented executives, and teamed them up with the Career Foreign Service. This created a magical winning formula. This is a group that invented techno-economic statecraft, which is now the bipartisan model that bridges a Republican administration and a Democratic administration. And it's for all areas of economic competition. So I think it's really critical that we do that. And there's, the other thing that I would point to, too, is the United States Innovation and Competitive Act, which is a combination of two of the bills that we designed. One of those is the CHIP Act, $50 billion CHIP Act, and the other was the $150 billion Endless Frontier Act for research investment with our allies in 10 critical national security sectors. So I think we're beginning to wake that up. You know, everybody's beginning to wake up on this fact, and we just can't sit on our, our haunts. You know, one of the things we've got to make sure as well is that, China needs hard currency. And one of the things I was really pleased to see from the Biden administration is that they institutionalized capital market sanctions, because, there's 500 companies on a commerce entity list. That means we can't export technology to them. And by the way, the vast majority of those we're still financing, and we've got to close that gap. And these are some of the things that we need to do. We need to wake up to.
Mr. Crawford, finally, I'd like to have your assessment of overall the current U.S.-China relations, because President Biden said that we are not seeking a new Cold War. And Secretary Blinken also said we are seeking to work cooperatively to solve the challenges between Washington and Beijing. Even though Biden administration used three words to describe the U.S.-China relations: confrontation, competition, and cooperation. We talk about Taiwan issues and also trade talk, and we also talk about the technology war between Washington and Beijing. What is your overall assessment of Biden's policy and strategy and current U.S.-China relations, Mr. Kroc?
Well, one thing that I had a chance to see before my very eyes, and Daphne, as you know, I went out to Washington not really knowing anybody because of what I saw in China, my last trip there when I was running DocuSign. I've been going there since 1981. And what I could see is amped up economic competition has turned it into aggression. And then when I went to the State Department to run economic diplomacy, I could see it get really accelerated and amped up, particularly during the pandemic. And it continues on, and I don't see Xi slowing down his aggression at all. You know, he loves to sign, in essence, it's kind of a non-aggression pact. And it's really deceptive. And, what I have not seen is Xi honor any agreements unless it's to his favor. I mean, if you don't believe me, just ask the people of Hong Kong. Mm-hmm.
Thank you so very much for joining us today, Mr. Kroc. We hope to talk to you soon.
Thank you, Daphne. Take care.
以上就是这个星期的海峡论坛节目，感谢您的收看。提醒您，来宾发表的是个人观点，不代表美国之音。祝您晚安，我们下周节目再会。